Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
All right, and welcome to another episode of Boots, Balls, and Bras podcast. Today we have, I think maybe the best guest you could possibly have 100%. As the first special guest.
Wow.
It is the one, the only, Kelly Smith! We don't need to introduce you, but we will a little bit. Arsenal women, if you've been living under a rock for the last 100 years. Very many honors, too many to read. The podcast isn't long enough. And you were nominated for the Ballon d'Or, I asked you earlier, 4 times, and you said...
I don't know. I think so.
Well, welcome to the pod, Kelly.
Nice to be here with like-minded friends. Thanks for asking me, Farah.
Fabulous. Well, we are very, very honored. And we're going to throw you right into the mix because we want to know about the Ballon d'Or thoughts and what we, our reactions to all of it, because you've been there.
Yeah.
You've been nominated 4 times. First of all, what is that like to go there?
Oh, it's a different world, really. Something that I've never experienced up until that time. I think it was 20... I can't remember now. I feel that old. But yeah, no, they really treat you special when you go. I took my dad on a flight out there, and you don't even go through security properly. They just get you off the plane, put you in a black car, and you feel really special. And I got into the car, and Pele was actually in the car.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my God, this is like big time. So yeah, my dad, we were like that. I'm like, having a little bit of conversation. I'm like, I want a selfie, I want a picture. And I'm like, we'll do it when we're at the baggage claim. But by the baggage claim, when we got ushered through, they put us through security away from everybody else that got off the plane. And I was like, right, I'm going to get his picture right at the baggage, and it would have gone.
Aww.
So he got in his car. So I missed my one opportunity to get a picture with Pele.
All right. Well, we'll see what we can arrange.
We should have had my mum with you, mate. She would have been like, Pele, come here. Literally. Amazing.
Oh, that's good. Well, let's chat about the Ballon d'Or. What do you guys think? Farah, thoughts on Ballon d'Or winner, obviously, Alexia Putellas for the second time in a row, first time ever.
I think, having seen the changes that they made, it's now on a season as opposed to a whole calendar year. I think she deserves to win it for a second time running, second year running, should I say. She had a phenomenal season with Barcelona. I think she's been a driving force behind that team and their success. Obviously, she missed the Euros through injury. We'd have loved to seen her on the biggest stage. Yeah. But yeah, fantastic player. And I think certainly her getting it again, I think she deserved it. I'm interested to know how, because I remember, when Kelly was nominated.
Yeah.
And the frustrating thing about that, at the time Kelly was nominated, for me, she was the best player in the world performing. And you don't get credit for that. She get, I think you said you finished 5th, Kel, wasn't it? You got, and it's like, how do they, like, who picks it? Like, how does it get, who picks it? Who's the nominees behind it? And that's the frustrating thing, because so often in sport, it's, if we like you, you're going to get nominated. And if we don't like you and we're jealous of you, you're not going to get nominated. And that's far too often happens. And that's what happened years ago with Marta, because she was the only name that everybody knew within the game.
I was going to say,
and
that's
she won
what,
it multiple times.
I think that's why I lost out to it, because nobody really knew who I was.
I did.
And with a last name like that, how could they not?
It's kind of common, right, Smith? But yeah, I think all club captains from the national teams have a vote. Yep. And everybody only knew about Marta. Nobody really knew about me at that time. So that was the frustrating part, because I felt like I was really up there. I knew I wasn't going to win it, because the visibility around me in England was never there. It was nice to go out there, but I knew in my deep down that I was never going to win it, because I didn't feel the voting system was right.
Just
on that, because obviously, Bex, you've been at FIFA, like, in terms of governance, is this something that they sort of talk about? Like, is it just part of what they do with other systems, and they just kind of take that blueprint rather than looking at the game itself and how maybe that should be structured?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I mean, to be completely honest, what used to happen is you'd have the top 100 national teams that could vote. And it was, as Kelly said, it's captain and the coach. And we didn't, I didn't watch any. Mm. So I got to vote from the New Zealand captain spot. You couldn't see any games from England or Germany. I mean, Germany where I was playing, you could. And so you were clearly biased by the only things you've seen. So any kind of media coverage that any female player got at the time, you were like, she must be the best. Yeah. And Marta's agents were clearly some of, he's the biggest agent for some of the male players. So he got her in the right spots and, you know, hats off to them for doing that. But I remember my first year at FIFA, I got put like a list just got put on my desk and they were like, here's the players we're thinking about. What do you think? And I was like, you're asking me to write the Ballon d'Or list for the best players on the planet and with no visibility, couldn't see anything. And that literally was how it was for 2 years. Like I used to do the short list for the Ballon d'Or and it's probably confidential, but there you go on Boots, Balls and Brawls.
No, it's you're right. It's crazy. I remember I got asked to go to the FIFA Best Awards.
Yeah.
And
that was when they rebranded, right?
She won the Player of the Year, but wasn't in Team of the Year.
Who was this?
So there was like four players that was in Team of the Year, but wasn't nominated for top three players. It was just the whole, what I'm saying, she wasn't in the 11, the best 11.
Who's this, sorry?
Potato. But she won the best player. So it didn't make sense that you're not in the 11, but you won the award.
I've got a solution. Put it in a hat, shake it, pick some names
every
out,
player.
And then it's equal then.
What do you think about Beth Mead finishing second?
Look, I think the first thing that you mentioned is actually quite important. The fact that they've changed it from the calendar year of January to December to August to July, so the full season, I think is important because it means we have to watch more of the club matches. Mm-hmm. So the Euros, Women's Euros, was not included technically in this. Yeah. Now, was it included in it? Yeah, obviously, because everybody is looking at Beth Mead and how well she did in the Women's Euros, I think, and saying, she deserves to be the best. Although I do think that she played an amazing season, but I don't watch Arsenal probably as much as Kelly Smith does, so she might be better place to answer that. But I think she deserved definitely to be in the top five.
It's kind of tricky because then obviously Pop doesn't come in at six then in terms of if we're including the Euros, because surely
she was injured for a lot of the season.
But look, when she turned up at the Euros, everyone saw what she could do. So it's a kind of touch
very
and go
good
in
example
terms of.
Very good example.
Trying to eliminate the anomalies and stuff like that. So I think, I guess that's as fair as you can kind of get in terms of your your sort of domestic leagues, I think.
Yeah. What do you think, Beth?
I think, Beth must be really frustrated with it because I know I would, having the season, the assists, the goals, the way she dominated games. And I think I'd be frustrated if I was her, because if the Euros wasn't included, for me, she would have definitely won it.
Yeah.
Ahead of Pateas. Unfortunately for Pateas, she didn't make the Euros, but we would have seen how good she is against Beth Mead.
Yeah.
Poor Beth.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, with the Euros being cut out of it,
it's a shame because that is a major tournament.
It's right that she finishes behind Pateas based off club season, but if the Euros was involved, she'd have been bringing it home.
But knowing Beth, this will like spur her on. Surely like now she's going to go and score a hat trick like in her next game.
World
and be
Cup,
like, and just start kicking on like World Cup, just turning up and be like, told you so.
Yeah, because that's what she did, right? And what I liked was Benzema obviously went on the men's side and he was not in the French team for a long time. And Beth obviously didn't make it to the Olympics. So I like that. I know it doesn't. I don't need to be on the national team. It's not all about just, you know, the biggest stage. I'm going to work and become the best player that I possibly be. So I like that as well. What about the rest of the teams, the rest of the players that were in the list? I personally really like the fact that there was Tiani Endler, you know, a goalkeeper finally in the top, and Millie Bright as a defender. I thought that was brilliant because I, as a center back, obviously I watch center backs, and I thought she was absolutely outstanding, especially in the Women's Euros, which is not included. But thoughts on the rest of the list or anything?
Yeah, I think in terms of Millie, she's been really consistent, I think, across the past few seasons and has taken it into international level as well. So I thought she would have been a little higher up in terms of that. And then Miedema.
But she's a defender.
But she's, I know. And then Miedema does what Miedema does. So I thought she definitely would have been at least in the top 10.
Yeah.
But I guess it opens up it up for new names so we can get that more eyes on the game and stuff like that. So I'm just excited to see.
Do you know who I'm disappointed at? Bomati.
I know.
Like, honestly,
that's crazy, I know.
This player, like, I can't even tell you how much I like her.
But do you know what? Yeah.
Like,
she naturally does it. Some people take it for granted that,
Bomati
just
she not
does
up there?
Bomati does.
She's like, fifth. She got fifth.
Yeah, but I mean,
you think she should have been top three?
If there. You watch Barcelona, she make like Kira Walsh at Manchester City, when she was there, she makes Manchester City tick.
Yeah.
Bomati does that for Barcelona, and this is probably why Piteous is as effective with Hermoso up top and scoring goals, because they're able to have that freedom to connect with her behind, who can do everything in the field, literally everything.
Lena Oberdorf is a similar player as well.
Oberdorf a lot. She was, her Euros was amazing. I love watching her play. Just her understanding and breaking up play and then giving it to players that are further forward. I'd love to have played with her.
And FYI, she's 20 years old.
Yeah, mad.
Farrah was dribbling about all Euros. She was like, oh my gosh, let's play out. Like all Euros, like the silent assassin.
What people didn't recognise in the final is the job that Frank Kirby did. Because Oberdorf, if you stop her playing like Fran did, I know Fran in possession wasn't involved as much for England. But if you've seen her movement, taking Oberdorf into areas that she didn't want to go, and she weren't in the game. So if you watch the England-Germany game and take your eyes off the football and seeing what Frank Kirby did, that is why I think Germany wasn't as effective in that game.
Such a good point. What about Sam Kerr getting third? Obviously plays in our league here, FAWSL for Chelsea.
I think thoughts? If you're going off, Chelsea had a poor Champions League, didn't they?
Yeah.
But if you're going off of the league, FA Cup and Continental Cup, I think for Chelsea she was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. She pretty much won the league for them on her own with last minute goals. Mm-hmm. I definitely think she's up there. I mean, I always have to debate with her and Miedema. And Miedema is obviously my favourite, but what Sam Kerr does is score goals. Yeah. And that's what you're paid to do, score goals. And
she's not the most creative of players, is she? She's not going to beat one or two players like Miedema. Miedema possibly could do, but she plays well on the shoulders and she's fast. She's just an all-round great finisher. Mm. She just pops up when needed.
Yeah.
And the goals she scores are the ones that you have in your dream. You're like, oh, I flicked it over, I shot it, and then I bagged it. Like she actually does it. So she doesn't score a lot of them, but when she does, it buys her some time.
The last game of the season at United.
I mean, I was at the Arsenal game, and Arsenal sat next to the Arsenal bench pretty much, and they were like celebrating. They knew Chelsea were, I think it was 1-2 down, wasn't they? Mm-hmm. And they're like, you could just see them like, yes, it's like.
Yeah.
And then these two goals that went in, I'm just like in the stand celebrating as I do as a Chelsea fan. Shouldn't have been, obviously, because I'm working. But yeah, just like you, goals that are just worthy of anything, right?
I was at the game working and my mouth just dropped over like that. Did she just do that in the last game when they had to win and Arsenal had to win and she just pops up with this worldie? I mean, that's the type of player that she is, can do it when it matters.
Yeah, and you do that in training and your manager goes, man, like, play the ball. And actually you're like doing something ridiculous that you'd never ever do in a match. They'll be like, well, you'll never do that in a game. And she's like, yeah, well,
In the last game,
whilst we're down, I'll still put it out.
Yeah. The only other thing I thought was interesting about the Ballon d'Or, and it always happens because it's a very European-driven awards, that the US players, I often think, are they really the best players? Like Dabina, the Brazilian, who's nominated for MVP of the league, not in the list. Sophia Smith, I think, is a fantastic. We saw her against England, absolute stunner, but she's really young. You know, is she carrying teams like a Bolmati is or like a Kira Walsh is? So I tend to always think that they kind of get the US side wrong. Any thoughts on that?
Who was the highest? Was it Rodman? Was she the highest US player?
Yeah. I think it was Morgan. Morgan was 13. Morgan was 13. Yeah. And Rodman was 18th. Yeah. Diani was also on there. I thought she was fantastic. All right. Any upcoming youngsters that we can see in that list in the next years that we like? Oberdorf, we've already mentioned.
I love Selma Bakker from Lyon. Yeah. I mean, I think she's only 20, early 20s, but I've never seen a left back play the way she does. Gets forward, drives with the ball, cross her ability to cross on the run and pick out Hegerberg. I mean, Hegerberg just must love playing with her. And she's also can go inside. She can go outside. You know, she's just so sexy on the ball and just so confident. I think she will be the best left back in the world.
Wants me to say her.
You had a nice left foot.
Did you play left back?
I tried. I think Jaden Shaw, who plays San Diego with Casey, I've been watching her a lot. I think 17 maybe
in the NWSL. Oh my god, Wave,
like up front, she's going to be something super special. So for me, I'd like to see her going up the list. I'm sure she will be there and thereabouts very, very soon.
Nice. I've got to say Lauren James. I can't not. Mm. I mean, she's the closest to you, Kel, that we're going to get in terms of what she can do with the ball.
Quality.
And I don't think yet. I think we're a good couple of years yet until she gets more playing time at Chelsea. We could see her for England the other week.
What do you think her best position is?
I think it's central in a 10 or a false 9. So either as a 10 or a 9 that can drop with runners beyond, because in those pockets, she's frightening. Mm. And she can shoot from distance, left or right foot. And she sees passes. Mm. I think out on the wing, I think you take a lot of her attributes away. Mm. I felt for England when she was on it, 1v1, very good in final third. I felt she played safe at times. And I think with experience of being involved in the England setup, then she'll play with more confidence in terms of when she gets on it, she'll be more direct with it. Mm. You could see she didn't want to lose the ball in that game.
Yeah, I think as she grows tactically as well, I think she can have that sort of free role to be able to kind of just play and see what happens, but then be able to kind of fill into gaps and recognise how play's moving on. So, yeah, really excited about Lauren as well.
And she always looks so chill. Oh. Yeah, like, she's just like, it's playing with a cigar in her mouth. She's like, whatever.
School, it's like school football, isn't it? Just no care in the world and just, smooth. Just actually glides
smooth. But that's how you are when you're younger, aren't you? You're fearless. You don't really have that pressure or expectation on you. So, yeah, I think I'd have to agree with both of you. She's certainly a player to watch for Chelsea.
Agree that
next
she's closest to you, or agree that she's a good player?
Almost as good.
She's a different player to me, but she. I see what you mean. She has some very good close ball tight, qualities. Can turn on a sixpence, see a pass, shoot with both feet, like you said. Could do that with my eyes closed.
Still. With two kids already. Awesome. All right, that wraps up Ballon d'Or, I reckon. Right, then let's move on to the FAWSL league here in England, obviously, because we had a very interesting and exciting weekend, kicking off with Aston Villa losing to West Ham, although we had a very interesting situation with Hawa Sissoko's red card in the stoppage time. Thoughts on the red card and just that in general, or the game? Kelly, you're laughing.
Well, I think Tyson Fury would have been happy with that punch.
Oh, yeah, agreed.
Nice left hook. But no, to be fair, there is no space in this game for that. But it does happen. It rears up every now and then. And I've done it. I've not actually swung at someone, but you rile them up enough to try and get them to do something that gets them sent off. It's part of the game. And I think when people think women's football is pure, you know, it doesn't see that, you shouldn't see this in the women's game. It happens because it's charged with adrenaline and there are egos and things flare up. It's professional sports. It will happen every so often, but it's up to the clubs and the FA to deal with what happened. But, you know, I showed Farah a picture of one of the Blackburn players had me up against the throat like this. But you know, you just get on with it. It's part and parcel of football, I think. It's not nice to see at times, but it happens.
Mm. It is. The decision was correct in terms of the sending off.
Definitely.
I think she was definitely provoked. But as Kelly mentions there, it's part of the game. It's what you do. Mm. I remember playing when I was at Everton and we played against Arsenal. And Jane Ludlow, for them, was just a driving force in that midfield, box to box. And one of the hardest, especially when you don't like running, one of the hardest to keep up with. And she fouled me. And I remember being on the floor and I kind of kicked out a little bit where the referee couldn't see. And it's obviously got, it's right, like she's over me now with her hand here. And I'm like, ref, can you see what she's doing to me? Because I wanted her sent off.
Yeah.
We were playing them 3 weeks later in a FA Cup final. Mm. So if she gets sent off, she misses that cup final.
Yep.
She got sent off for that and missed the cup final. And Everton beat Arsenal in extra time. So it was like perfect.
So you and I provoked her in
terms of I wanted her to get, I wanted a reaction. And and as Kelly says, there's players that will react. Some are calm enough and disciplined enough not to, but those passionate players in there, sometimes you lose it.
The number one most passionate reactive player that we have ever played against. I want to hear if you guys agree. Marta. Literally, like there was one time where you knew that if you flicked the ball in her face or you did something to her and you could piss her off, she was gone. Yeah. Her head was gone.
Mm.
Did you guys experience that too, or was it just me?
With Marta? No, I never experienced that.
Opposite sides of the pitch probably.
No, too high. She was up this end, I was up that end. But
you thought I was going to say you, didn't you?
Yeah, I thought. Kelly had an incident
Kelly's
in the past.
Kelly's that loose cannon, yeah.
Do you want to share the incident?
No, not really. No.
I just think for me, obviously, it's definitely a sending off, but she's provoking her. I think we need to look in, like, she's come to her three times. Mm-hmm. It's not really a punch. If that's not really
more of a slap, wasn't it?
It's more of a, like, keep your distance, like, back up. And I think in terms of, like, if someone continues to be the aggressor, then surely that's more than a yellow card. Because obviously there's a yellow card foul.
Yeah, but
this
is what I was going to say, Earth. On the replay, when I saw the pull, that's a yellow card,
right?
And then the shove is obviously another booking. Exactly. I didn't, originally when I made my decision based around she should have only got a yellow and Sissoko a red, so Maylin a yellow and a red. When I've thought back to the decision, she should have originally been booked for the pulling of the shirt.
Correct.
Right? So that's a yellow card. And then she actually initiates the contact then, or the reaction from Sissoko.
More
so
Maiden
should have been sent off for two yellow cards. It should have been a red card.
But you can't get two yellow cards in one play.
But it wasn't. You'd already been given the foul and it was after that reaction.
No, she was waiting. She was waiting. So she was going to call the yellow for holding because it was a clear sustained holding. But then as it progressed, then it stays the same phase.
So it is a yellow.
Yeah. And also, like, if you, I mean, this is my interpretation, but if you were to push someone, it's not necessarily a red card. It would more be like a yellow.
But yeah, yellow. But there was like two or three pushes. Yeah. So I'm like, you're provoking something. You want something to happen.
Definitely.
Therefore, it could have been a double yellow.
And the point is exactly as Kelly said, it just doesn't belong, does it? Do you guys think, though, that the part timing of it is coming from the coaches, the managers? Because some of the behavior I'm seeing from managers and yelling and the screaming and absolutely losing their heads. I mean, we saw, Jonas from Arsenal get a warning last season as well. And also there was the West Ham manager, Paul Kaczynski, did get sent off for his reaction. Do you guys think it starts with the managers as the teacher in the room?
Yeah, well, obviously, he's come from the men's game and in terms of that's a natural reaction. So it's like a habit that he's had inside of him. So he's going to have to unlearn that in order to kind of facilitate in the women's game. But do you want him to not be natural? I think in terms of that passion and that drive, you want that within your female players, but also to be managed in a way that we want to see our game played. So bring it. That's just how it is.
I'm one of them that, like, the game's about passion, right? Yeah. And these managers' jobs now that the game's professional, their jobs are on the line. They need to show as much passion on the sideline to try and drive and motivate your players, because that is like a sixth place finish. So, for example, both of those teams that were playing, they're fighting for that six and above, right? Or to stay out the relegation.
Yeah, top half, yeah.
So you need managers on the side. If I had a manager that is just happy sitting back and chilled when, you know, we're in a dying minute and potentially, you know, up against it, which they were, West Ham, Villa in the second half on top for large periods of that game.
Yeah, they look like
you need your manager on the side. You need to hear him. You need to hear your, you know, the sub. You need to hear the crowd.
I just think that we don't want to kill the passion from managers.
I think that, I don't know, managers that I've played for that you can hear on the side, for me, they get the best out of you. They push you that extra yard that you need in those moments.
So if you lose that, you're going to lose the game a little bit.
I don't want to lose the game.
The passion. You want the passion. Kel, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I agree with Farah. You want to hear your manager saying the right things, egging you on, but you don't want to see him get sent off, because then you're, I think, without him for a couple of games and then you lose him or her from the sidelines dictating what they want from you. So yeah, it's a hard place.
I like what he said though. I mean, look, I wasn't there, and there's no photo evidence of what has happened in the tunnel for him to be sent off, but he wants to protect his players, and he said, I'm going to stand by my players, I'm going to protect my players when things are being said. Now, no one knows what was said. You've seen some tweets, which I'm not going to go into because I don't know the facts. But if I have a manager that comes out and says they're going to stand by my players and protect us, that's a manager you want to play for. Yes, he's going to miss a couple of games now in the stand, but I like the fact that he is passionate about defending his players in the right moments.
So even as a manager, I'm not going to ask my player to do anything that I wouldn't do. So they clearly do follow
managers' behavior. And I've seen that, like, whatever team you're in as a player, right? So sorry, continue.
No, 100%. And I'd say it starts from the top. So if that's the drive and the passion that my manager's telling me day in, day out, not just on a match day, but during training, I'm then going to, once we go over that white line, we are now responsible in terms of managing the game. So me as an individual player, I need to know how to react and how not to react. But I know in terms of if I do something, my manager's going to back me, because actually that's what we're about. That's what our club's about. This is how we dictate and conduct ourselves. So I think, definitely, obviously, in terms of the sending off, and he's come out and said that wrong is wrong, but actually in terms of protecting his players, the drive and the passion and what they want to do as a team, you've got to be consistent with that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to just throw a little wrench in it, probably as being the non, you know, English person in the room as well, but see, I see that there's a clear line. I think that if you're a manager and you're in a leadership role, that one, the referees are there to protect the players. You as a manager have no space getting into a fight or slinging words, because that's what the referees are there to do. And I thought that the official in that game actually did a really good job. It wasn't, you know, she can't control the players, but once it happened, she stopped it. She got in the middle of it. It was gone. And so that actually died down better than I've seen other referees handle things, specifically in the men's game as well. But I genuinely think that you can still have a ton of passion and be a really loud coach, because I totally agree with you, but that there is a line in what we say, how we act, and that we have to be respectful to each other. And I just sometimes think as a non-British person living in England, the fandom sometimes crosses that line for me. You know, the racism that we see, the homophobic slurs, and there's a fine line between you start with that and you start with fights and we say, yeah, it's, you know, it's passion. And then it starts going into that slippery slope. So for me, it's a no-go.
And that's why I think football has the sort of chance to change things in terms of societal issues. Because if you look outside of the game, actually in society, that's what happens. We look in government, that's what happens. So actually, like I said, football is a vehicle where we can show in terms of good practice in what we want to see. So and at I the think, minute, we're not there.
Yeah, but you know what, honestly, I don't know how you play sport without that passion.
It's not the passion.
Well, it is. But what I'm saying is that you want to win, right? So what I'm saying, when things are going against you and whatever, those natural reactions happen.
No,
but
I'm not saying
they're correct. And I know that some behaviours can be controlled, for sure.
Yeah, but you said, in terms of blood, you knew if you did certain things,
what I'm saying, that's high performers. That Kelly was a high performer. Yeah. You can get under their skin because they want to win. They're winners. I don't think you take that out of people.
So what's WSL? Ain't that high performers?
That's what I'm saying. So what I'm saying, you're saying that we have to get that out of them. You can't. High performers, you can't take that away from them. That's natural.
But you don't have to be dirty.
Yeah, but that's in terms of growth of a player.
She was dirty. She was a calm player, but dirty.
Yeah, exactly.
She was a hothead and dirty. So what are you saying?
This is going downhill very quickly, everybody. Let's just take a breather.
It's about learning it and having strategy. So I know that, yes, inside of me, you've got that fire, but actually the outcome of that is only going to go one way.
Of course.
So you have to be able to manage that. Some players just won't be able to manage that, and they're still high performers. Some will be able to just play that game, baby, and just make it work. So it's about actually
how do you keep making that
same mistake? Everyone must be able to change. You can change it. You have to learn from it. But otherwise, you continue to make the same mistake.
But what I'm saying, do you not think the game in general has changed, right? Because that never used to happen. You never had fiery managers on the side, really. Like, you think
a couple of fiery players, but not managers.
Players, but not managers, right? Yeah. And I think with the profiling of the game and now it's all changed. You've seen it in the men's game. These managers and everybody that's under pressure.
I hate it in the men's game.
We can hate it as much as we want, but it's not going to change. And I don't think it will be managed. And I don't think behaviours will change.
Because it's already been set up as a culture, I think. That's the culture that's accepted, especially here in England, but other places as well.
Why is it not?
And it's not
the same in rugby. Men's rugby, they respect the referee, they don't go on. But we need to learn from that.
But that's from grassroots, Kel, right? They're probably doing
it. No.
They're not doing it at grassroots.
The All Blacks, you're learning.
Sorry, I'm saying, you don't just start at the top and then it filtered down, which is what we try and do in England. We start it here and then they think it's going to start. You've got to start it from when you're a kid.
That's exactly right. And that's the point, right? So Jurgen Klopp is losing his absolute shizzle on the sideline.
He's German, guys.
He is German, but he's...
So it's not just English coaches.
Yes, exactly. No, you're right. It's not just English coaches. And I don't mean to be, it's not about England specifically, but it starts there, and then everyone thinks it's okay, and because he's the best and he's winning Ballon d'Ors and he's giving speeches and everyone idolizes him, then clearly the dad on the sidelines of his six-year-old kids or mom on the sidelines is gonna think that that's okay and emulate it. So it's a really good point, and I think it's something we should think about, I think, in the women's game, because like you said, it can be a reflection and a vehicle for societal change and also for how we can lead. And I don't agree with that type of leadership style.
Just last thing on this, obviously in terms of managers now and how high profile the game is, obviously they're now having to be high performers because their jobs are on the line.
Absolutely.
Where we look at the contrast in terms of rugby, it's a non-starter. If you can't comply to how we conduct things, you're not even in our game. So from a grassroots level all the way up to elite, the step when there's no, they don't kind of filter the standards. This is what we do. This is how our game is. You're either in you're out. Whereas football's a bit like, okay, but they're really good. We can mold them. Let's just kind of bring them in, give them a chance. So
it's a different culture.
It's a different
culture. And coming from growing up in New Zealand with an All Black as an uncle, like there was a lot spoken about culture and how we, you know, how you respect the others and you can win and you can lose, but you always shake the hands. And it is a very different culture, and I really like it personally. But anyway, I think we could debate that for hours and hours, but it was a good chat, I think. What about the other games that we saw on the weekend? Arsenal barely beating Reading. That was actually a really good game.
Shout out to was it Burns, the goalkeeper, or WSL
penalty
debut?
Yeah,
but it's a poor penalty.
But just across, just to save, across the game.
The goal though.
The goal might have been the worst out of it. But look, the save she made, she was phenomenal, I think.
That was a Reading goalkeeper.
So young, and as your debut. Like, yeah, obviously not, but she was good in terms of like how well she played. Well, yeah. And yeah, shout out, because keepers always get, we say defenders get left out, keepers always get left out.
Agree, man.
They do, but you know what? Her performance would have been better if she'd have saved that goal, because Blackstenius, there's no way that should have gone in.
My, it come from distance. It was so one. Like, don't matter, like saying you've got £1,000, you've lost 20, throw the rest of it.
Okay, but let me tell you, right? Reading's game plan for me was spot on, mm-hmm. and I think they executed it the best they could have executed it.
What was right? that? What was the game plan?
They did it in moments, because in moments they pressed high, and in moments they just let the centre halves have it.
Yeah,
right. But they defended really well, and they carried the ball. What they did was, instead of going long, which they would do, you know, in transition, they would normally play long balls. They actually had ball carriers on the pitch who had legs that could take the ball up the pitch and get the team up. Mm-hmm. I just think the goal that they conceded was poor. Mm. I think it's preventable, mm-hmm. and I think it's a goalkeeping error. I think for a goalkeeper, she has to work her feet a lot quicker, and it's only going that way. So for me, she should have saved it. The penalty, I think, from Kim Little is the worst I've seen Kim's execute a penalty. Normally, she just puts it high in the top corner. I was watching the game, and I'm like, she ain't missing this.
Goalkeeper,
because she don't
note.
Miss. But it's a good save. It was the save come at a time where Reading were actually on top. They had a few corners, back-to-back corners, where they had a couple of chances, one that got cleared off the line.
Yeah, I thought Reading could have nicked a point out, I think, especially the last 10 minutes. Arsenal were on the on the ropes, and that's when you've got to then take that chance. Yeah. I think Tash Dowie had a chance in the latter stages.
Emma Harris
won on, you know, puts it wide. And they're the moments in games like that when those players need to put the ball in the back of the net, because they could have got a point out of the game. Yeah. And I don't think Arsenal were at their best, but they still dug deep and won the game. And that's, you know, this game potentially last year was their Birmingham, where they dropped points and potentially that hurt them at the end of the season. So you have to see, I guess, give credit to Arsenal. They dug deep. They got numbers behind the ball. They didn't have their two starting centre-halves. I thought Catley and Wubamoy were shaky at times in possession. They looked nervous, but we've got to watch out to see how they develop over the season, because like Rafa and Williamson are out for several weeks. So, but yeah, I think I was impressed with the guts, and I think it's 9 clean sheets.
Yeah, they've got a record now in the WSL.
But I was looking at the teams that they've played. They haven't played a Chelsea, a Man United, or a City.
9 clean sheets, they broke a record. Yeah,
9. But they haven't played the top 3 or 4
I looked
in that.
To them, none of that.
You still got to do it against the teams that are put in front of you.
And that's the difference, isn't it, between the ones that will win the league. Mm. And that was the point that we were making, Arthur and I were making about Tottenham, obviously, was that they can take, we think we can, they can take some points from those top
they
teams.
Can't.
And
they can't. They can't.
All right, Spurs Liverpool. Spurs over to you, Eartha. Spurs fan.
Obviously for new home ground, scrappy game. I think they had, again, dug deep in terms of the win. I spoke to Beck Spencer after the game, and yeah, just the 3 points was the most important thing, and they managed to grind it out. So they're getting closer and closer to the first under the third. So
Kelly, they think that Spurs are good. Kelly, this is, I'm going to speak to an expert pundit here.
Yeah.
Are Spurs going to finish third this year?
No.
Thank you.
In my opinion, no.
Are they going to finish in the top four?
Lucky fifth or sixth if they can get
there. Thank you.
Watch this space, guys.
I was at the United game against Brighton.
Man United Brighton.
What do we think of their chances of pushing Chelsea and Arsenal for that number one spot? Or do you think it's a case of them trying to break that third and try and get third into place. Like, for me mentally, I think Man United are at the point where they need, you know, like when England, when we used to could never get out at the knockout stages, we'd always qualify out of the group and we could never win a knockout game. And then we won it, and we've gone on to now, obviously, win the Euros, having got past that mental bad
Women's
block.
World Cup 2015 was shocking. I was like, what is England doing this far in the tournament?
Exactly.
Yes, go ahead. Continue.
But I think that's where Man United are at, in terms of like, they've, you know, you look at last year, they were third for so long, and then and they let it slip.
It's a mental shift.
I think it's a mental shift. I think that they're probably at the stage where, yes, they've got better squad depth, but I think they're at the stage where that mental block to finish third is a more realistic finish for them than pushing the top two.
Manchester United are looking at Man City with the loss of players that they've had this season, and seeing the players come in and then lose the opening game. Do you think that would boost Man United to think we can beat City, like to that third spot?
I think so. I think that's what they need to aim for. I think they've got a good squad in terms of, like, you look at their attack now and how many different attacking options they have. They've obviously strengthened at the back with Mayor Letizia instead of Thomas Doty, who her move from Chelsea to Man United wasn't a good one.
Yeah.
But I tell you who is a good signing for Man United. Garcia.
absolutely.
What an unbelievable player she is. And I think she'll be the difference in this Man United team this year.
Well, not even that. I think
up close, Surf, at the weekend, I was like, wow.
I'm not disputing that. But also, I think just like the mental side of things, I think the England players as well, where you talk about the Tash Dowies or those players up front that will be clinical in getting those goals. Look at two, look at those goals. They think that they are the best in those positions, and they'll go on in terms of attacking teams and taking things on. So I think in terms of that mental shift, it's translating in terms of that, but also their performances. So I think that they believe, and obviously with Mark, he'll make sure that they believe as well in terms of from a management point of view, so that leadership point of view. So yeah, I think definitely top three, Man United, 100%.
I think they've got different options up top. That's now, what I mean, more that with Nikita Paris, Garcia,
Rachel Williams,
Williams.
Galton.
They've even got the Canadian. I can't think of her name. They signed her from West Ham.
Oh, Leon.
Yeah. So they've got like options. You know what I think as well? Mary Earps is playing with a confidence level that I have never seen before. Yeah. Because you think back to last year, there was a few goals that she herself would say that she probably should have saved and she was disappointed with. She is playing with this confidence. It's mad because for me, she went unnoticed in the Euros. She had a phenomenal Euros for England. And it's very rare in tournament football, goalkeepers go the whole tournament without a mistake. And she did that.
Can I say, Mary Earps is moving like Drake.
Even in the warm-up, I'm telling you.
Her confidence.
The swag, man.
Her confidence.
Mad, right?
She is moving like Ronaldinho, Drake. Like, her chest is high. Like, I see it all the time. And she's like, when she says things, she looks at you like, did you really think you was going to beat me? Like, come on. Like,
and one of their saves in the game. At the weekend, that was insane.
Just before that.
Step to the left, all the way up in that upper name.
Even when I just see her just warming up, like, the confidence. I don't know where she gets it from,
best the teams that have won. So you think of the season where Liverpool won and how good their keeper was, and you think of Manchester City when they won and when Chelsea won the Champions League.
It's a key role.
And the goalkeepers, they're so key in terms of winning Absolutely. Things. And I think she'll play a big part in their success this year, whatever that might be.
And speaking of Man City, they, even though we don't necessarily think that they'll be top three this season, because I agree with you guys, I think Man United just looks stronger. And if they don't make that top three, it'll be a psychological issue rather than a capability issue. But Man City still beat Leicester. That would how the Americans would say it. 4-0. Mm-hmm. Thoughts?
The game they should have won, right? They should have won that game, but it's good that they've got a clean sheet because they have been conceding goals. Because obviously conceded 4 in their opening game and then 2 against Chelsea. So 6 in 3 games for them isn't the standard that they have. So I think it's a good win after the international break. But they're building. They're trying to find their best 11 now without the spine of their team. And that's something that's really difficult to do. And the fact that they let so many players go, for me, is crazy. And I think in doing that, will be you'll be able to see now where in terms of where they finish in the league because of that.
I think great to see Chloe Kelly transitioning those performances from the Euros into domestic club level. I think she hit the post a few times as well in the last game.
She also took her own teammate out with a celebration.
good to see Chloe. I think she's going to have to step up in terms of the leadership with so many people departing. Good to see Bunny Shaw in terms of getting on the score sheet. And I think
like Bunny Shaw.
For me as well, just her...
From Jamaica.
Yeah, like in terms Khadijah. Of the impact from a Caribbean point of view, it gives so many more girls that hope that actually this is somewhere that they can get into. So really loving that leadership and her sort of keeping the Caribbean CONCACAF on the map as well in terms of that.
Yeah, because we don't see very many. We don't see any Mexican players and we don't really see any Central Caribbean players either. So really only the Americans that have come over. So she's the only one in the league, I think, CONCACAF player right now.
We've got Canadians. We've got Drew Spencer, Becky.
All right. Anyway, Man City. Baby. Any thoughts on that, Carol? Man City, Leicester.
Job done. Yeah, I think I'm going to keep my eye on them because letting so many players go, it's going to take them a while to gel the players in the central areas. But I think Lauren Hemp is going to be key for them. Her assists. She needs to get more goals for me. She got one against Leicester. It was a ball, great ball across from Chloe Kelly, and she just nudged in front of the full back and headed the ball in the back of the net. But yeah, I think those three are deadly in that front three line. And if they can be consistent in their play, they'll be pushing for that third spot. But I'm not too sure whether they'll be picking up points enough to get that third spot as I see it right now.
Yeah. And Everton-Chelsea, that was an interesting game because Everton looked really good. I was watching it from the beginning. I actually thought Everton was going to take some points in that game. Do you guys watch that? Everton won Chelsea 3 in the end.
Yeah, I think Pernille Harder could have had a hat-trick in the first half, right? So I think the promising thing is they're still creating chances. It's just about the delivery. And I think not having Emma there might have been, I don't know, played towards it in some way, shape or form. And we'll see how that pans out throughout the season. But yeah, Chelsea are consistent. It's just about the finishing and if they're on it. And if they are, then teams are in trouble. And if they're not, then other teams have a chance to pick up points. So yeah, really excited to see how they get on throughout the season. And as I said, especially without Emma there for a few games as well.
I always, this is pop, like every season it seems to happen to Chelsea that after an international, they always have an away fixture that's quite far. I mean, they had Man United last year after an away fixture. So they always have that. And that's challenging in itself. It obviously takes a day away from training. Players that are coming back in from international, don't get me wrong, they should be used to it because they know they have a lot of internationals. They know they compete at the top throughout in all the competitions they enter. But it's difficult to go away to an Everton team that are in form under a new manager and exciting and playing a different style. But I think the return of Harder was important for that Chelsea team, especially without Emma Hayes being there.
Yeah.
I think she was key. But as you mentioned, Earth, and she said herself, she should have had a couple more goals. Yeah. But I think it's an important win for Chelsea against an Everton team that are going to be pushing the top four this year.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think it's time to move on to the halftime team talk. And you guys mentioned already Emma Hayes having her emergency hysterectomy. How does that affect Chelsea? What do we think about, first of all, what do we think about her coming out and saying exactly what it was? Because that felt fairly brave. But also I was like, do we really need to know? Like,
she's just being honest, isn't she? Yeah. She's not going to be there for however many games, several weeks. I don't know if it will affect them. I think they've probably prepared for this. Emma Hayes does everything right, it seems, in terms of her preparation. So if this was ever going to happen, you know, she's been quite sick for a while with her struggles with what she's going through. And I think, you know, her assistant, Denise Reddy and Paul, they know the team so well. They work so close as a unit. I personally don't think it will affect Chelsea. I'm sure she'll be at home watching the games on the phone in the ears of the coaches, giving her tactics and seeing the game the way that she was and playing the players that she should play and subs. I don't think it will affect them. I think it'll make them more hungry because it's already, when you play for Chelsea and you're the champions, everyone wants to beat you anyway. And now that's another thing that's happened that's kind of like, okay, well, what are you going to do now, Chelsea? So I think they're just going to step up and bigger shoulders and go out and perform for her.
I think they have so many leaders within that team that won't allow standards to drop anywhere, and you hear Eriksen, the captain, talking quite often about that leadership and the trust that Emma gives in her. But she also then allows her teammates to have that leadership because she likes to be open to different opinions and whatever else. But as Kelly mentioned there, knowing Emma's already got her signings next season for next season. So she plans so far ahead, and as Kelly said, she's been struggling with this illness, and so she would have known there would have been a time where this would have happened. So all of her preparation would have been done.
Yep.
I mean, I just think that in terms of the care that she's got at Chelsea, I think it's fantastic, and it shows how far the women's game's come in terms of her being able to get that support and medical attention that she needs, which I think is important. And hopefully that filters through, not just in WSL1 or not just at the top teams such as Chelsea, Arsenal, Manchester City, but all the way through the women's game.
Mm. Yeah, I think just from a sort of well-being point of view, it's a great to maybe highlight these issues within football. I know there's been a lot of work around sort of menstrual cycles in football, and I know definitely in the athletics, I saw Dina Asher-Smith talking about it. But actually, I think just from a well-being piece, to have that openness that actually, no matter whether you're an elite sports person or a high-paid coach or... Jenny from the block, like, this is what...
Love this Jenny. You like her.
She showed up in our last podcast,
she tweeted
too.
She tweeted me. She said, just kind of name dropped me again. So, yeah, just in terms of, like... the well-being piece, and definitely in terms of, like, we've done stuff around breast and bras, and I think just the whole medical piece is really, really important. And the more we keep talking about it, the more it's not a taboo. And again, it starts filtering down in terms of sort of grassroots. And really, it's about being proactive. So again, prevention's better than cure before you get to that end piece and think, oh, it's just me. Actually, these are things that are talked about. You can maybe recognize signs and get that support in terms of checkups and stuff like that. So yeah, kudos to Emma for definitely sharing her story and being open. And then obviously Chelsea for supporting and, yeah, really highlighting the issue. So,
yeah. Do you guys think, because this was something I struggled with in my career, especially at Wolfsburg, was really the lack of medical care and expertise around specific issues. And mine was, you know, knee issues. So that wasn't like anything that had to do with like a female specific issue. It was very, very generic. And I still really struggled finding a good knee surgeon, a good knee doctor, the physios that knew what they were doing. Do you guys think that this is a serious topic still in the women's game? Like, we talk about Chelsea being able to have that, but did you see it at Arsenal when you guys were there?
It's changed now. I think it's better now, Kettle. I mean, you think of our career, how many injuries, broken legs you play on that you're asked to walk around and jog the next day with a broken fibula. Like, it's crazy the things that as players that we did in our generation or our era of the game, like in terms of medical care, unless you was in international, but even that at times wasn't what it should be. It's certainly improved massively now. I think what the girls have now day to day is far better than what we ever had. Yeah. And hence why we can't walk half the time.
Yeah, we wake up in the morning. Had shin splints and like continued like a whole season playing because obviously
stress fracture in my back.
She's like, yeah, but I can still play. Yeah. I can still
play. They would just strap you up. Like, honestly, I played with tears in my quads, hamstring, and you just strap it. And then I'd go away with England after being on club, obviously playing for club. And they'd be like, why have you been playing with a strap? And I'm like, oh, I've got a sore quad. And they'd scan it and they'd be like, you're out for 6 weeks with a tear. I'd go home for 2 weeks while international was on and I'd strap it again and continue playing for my club. And that's the sort of thing that I guess medical staff at times would allow players to do. So we were more powerful as players than the medics were at that time when the game wasn't so professional. I think now it's professional. Players don't need to risk injuries to play. It's a full-time job. They're going to get their earnings whether they play or they don't. For us, it's like if you play, you get an appearance fee, or if you score, you get a goal fee. So we were desperate to play and never miss any time on the pitch. And plus, you love the game. But I think now with the medics, they take more control, and rightly so. Taking decisions out of the players' hands, I think, is the best part of the game. Mm. And it's been something that hasn't been in the game, certainly when I was a player. I mean, Kelly played with God knows how many injuries, so you're probably best to talk about the medical care now compared to what you had.
Yeah, well, we were fortunate at Arsenal that we could use the men's physios. So it was Gary Lewin, who was the England physio, and then come back to Arsenal. And then Colin Lewin, which was his cousin. So they were very high profile physios that you could lean on. And then you go across to the men's side and you get treated by them and they'll give you a program. But then you're kind of on your own with the physio at Arsenal that's probably not as qualified. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, I played with so many injuries over the years because you want to play the game. You don't know what injury you've got. Like, I've played with
they wouldn't pay for a scan, would they? So, like, you'd need a scan. And back then, they just wouldn't pay for a scan. Mm-hmm. Like, unless they desperately thought you needed one, they just wouldn't.
It was a money thing, wasn't it? They probably didn't want to, unless you were literally broke your leg.
You did break it.
Oh, yeah, I did.
She broke her leg and had to jog in France and had to jog the next day.
Yeah, it was Bonpasta come behind me and I heard a crack and I thought it was our shin pads coming together. So I thought, oh, that hurts. And I still played on. I'm like, oh, this, I can't, don't just, think I can.
Where was it? Was it in your shin?
Yeah.
It, on your
it was my fibula. Yeah. Not my front bit, the fibula. Yeah. Yeah, come off. Oh, that hurts. It was right at the bottom of my ankle. And then the next day, I'm like, really hurts. So they're still trying to play. I think
trying it was the train. For the,
yeah, the train. And I'm running across the pitch like, oh, come on, you can do this. And I'm like, I really can't. And it wasn't until we got back a couple of days later, I'm like, it's still not right. I went for a scan. I broke my leg.
But you had to get your own scan?
I think the FA, because I did it on FA duty, they sent me away. But I'm like, God, if well, it's just frustrating, wasn't it? It's just crazy. The care really wasn't there. And that's due to where the game was at that point in time. I'm not being disrespectful for the doctor or the physio of England at the time, but it's just the way that it was set up. It wasn't there to protect the players at times.
What about, though, in the bottom parts of the league, like the lower clubs, do we think that there's enough care? Because I know that the FA is doing some work and they've redone some of the contracts and they put certain things in the player contracts where there has to be, for example, medical insurance so that the clubs do have to provide a certain amount of care to the players. But like, for example, I was speaking to some South American players recently and they still say that if they tear their ACL, their career is done because clubs will not pay for a scan. They won't even pay for scans. So they can't.
That's crazy.
And they won't pay for the surgery. So
yeah, definitely lower down the pyramid, I think it's really hard to get that
outside
level of
WSL one, right?
Yeah, outside of WSL and Championship to get that medical attention. I don't know how many GoFundMes I've seen online and players, like even I think I saw Gary Lineker like pay for someone to get their knee operation done. So I think there has to be some sort of look at that because it's basically a safeguarding issue in terms of like players are putting themselves on the line, but actually then they're not getting the support and service that they need. And if we're always going to go to our NHS, which is already like struggling, again, that's just going to impact them to be able to play the game. So,
yeah. Because Farah, you had some health issues too near the end of your career too. I know it's like quite personal, so don't feel like you have to overshare. But
that's all right. That's
since
got,
you tend
that's
to
why
do
we
that.
An NHS because I'm still on the NHS. So yeah, I'm still continuing my treatment through the NHS. So yeah, frustrating. But as I say, I was quite lucky that the NHS
Leicester.
That I received during lockdown and continue to receive now has been very good. So my consultant, a kidney consultant I have, he's been, if I have a flare-up, which I've relapsed 6 weeks ago now, I can just call, email, and I just go to the hospital and he's there on hand. So, yeah, I'm quite lucky because not often the NHS are that good, but they've been certainly really good with me.
Just one thing. I remember when I was 12, actually at Arsenal, which was a long time ago, they actually gave us some forms and was like, oh, you should insure your legs. As a 12-year-old, they gave us these forms and it was something like, I don't know, £15 a month. And I was like, I could just about get travel expenses to get to JVC Centre. I haven't got £15. But I'm thinking like, that's how far ahead in terms of Arsenal and on the world in terms of the women's game. So I think it's really important, as you said, to look at all the different options to have that support and care. And then last thing before we sort of wrap up, obviously we was talking about Emma at the top around sort of menstrual care. I think another thing we need to be aware of, especially with across the game, is fibroids, which is a major NAVA issue, which is more common in sort of Afro-Caribbean communities. And if we're looking at improving the D&I within our game, this is something that might come in. But just generally across the sort of menstrual gynecology aspect, I think that's something that if we haven't started to look at alongside menstrual cycles.
Can you explain fibroids for those that maybe know?
So it's like a tissue, like tumour that sometimes sits on like...
We're getting technical here.
They come in different shapes and sizes. Sometimes they can be as big as a grapefruit. Sometimes they could be as small as golf balls. They can make you have heavy periods. And sort
and
of
they
impact.
Grow... And the ovary area,
your ovary area, and they can be very painful.
Yeah.
But yeah, just in terms of being able to perform, like it might be very difficult in terms of players. So I don't want to take up too much of the tea. I can see the tea coming in and the orange slices. So I know we need to.
being removed. Right. On to the second half. Which will be a short second half, actually. The UEFA Women's Champions League, because that kicks off this week as well. We've got two English teams in there, Arsenal and Chelsea. What chances do we think that they have to get further than Chelsea did, which was the group stage. They didn't get out of the group stage, as you mentioned, for our last year. What chances do we think that they have this season?
Kelly.
It's tough because Arsenal go away. They both travel away. Arsenal travel away to Lyon tonight.
Exactly.
And then obviously tomorrow Chelsea travel away to PSG and then they come back and they both have away fixtures. So I think they're both difficult fixtures. The fact that the flight isn't so far in terms of it's only an hour and a half, I think that helps a little bit. But in terms of the opposition, two of the top teams in France that we're facing, two of the top English teams.
Interesting that that happened that too. I know, English versus two.
And I think the thing is, I know that these English players at the minute are playing with such confidence. I don't know whether that gives them a little bit of an edge. But there's always that mental block when the English teams face Lyon. Not so much, I think, PSG, but certainly when English teams face Lyon, there's always that mental block in terms of beating them because they've been so dominant in the Champions League for so many years. But two tough fixtures, but winnable fixtures.
Sorry. Just going to say, Arsenal hasn't come up against Lyon since like 2011 or something I was reading. So they haven't actually had to face them in the Champions League.
They're just a bit weaker though, aren't they? With the centre-halves. I think losing both centre-halves is big for Arsenal. Arsenal. I mean, I think that's what goes against them a little bit. And with the front line that Lyon have, it's going to be worrying.
With their build-up play, a lot of it comes from the centre-halves, Williamson and Rafa. And I don't think Catley and Wubenwe are at that level. When they bring the ball out, they commit a player, or Leah can see passes that other centre-halves can't, that sets up Arsenal when they're attacking middle of the third pitch. I think if them two would have been fit, I would have been a lot more confident. Mm. But yeah, I think with Lyon's attacking players, it's going to be tasty.
Yeah, it is going to be tasty because Ada Hegerberg also was in that top 10 in the final, which I thought was really interesting because she obviously had her ACL injury and then has come back. But she looked fierce in the last season of the Champions League as well.
So do Arsenal go there and want a point? Because I know that's not Arsenal's mentality usually. What do you reckon? Do you go there and are you happy to come back with a point?
I think they'll try and make it very difficult first opening 10 minutes. Just try and be difficult. Don't be hard. Be hard to beat, and then get your ball players on the ball. I think they will go for the win. I don't ever see an Arsenal side.
That's
going
what I was going
to
say. Because
defend,
I don't.
But the early doors. Keep
they don't
it tight.
Have counter attack players, do they? So they don't have players that can play in transition that attack with speed. They're more of a build up phase team, aren't they? They play through the thirds, and then play in that final third area through deliveries or medium centrally. So I can't see them sitting in and trying to counter this Lyon team. Mm. So they only have one way or no one way of playing. Yeah. If they do play differently, I'll come back on this pod next week and be like, okay, I got it wrong.
But you have
got an
outlet in Blackstenius.
Yeah, Blackstenius, because she can play on the shoulder, which is...
We saw that in the early, so I think it was 26 seconds of the Arsenal.
They do
read in Arsenal
pace,
game. It was a Catley ball from deep, straight in, and that was from back to front. Yeah. So they have it, but I don't think they look to play that way. They
I like
build.
Them when they play that way, though. Yeah. Like when Arsenal played, when early on last season, when it was more direct, I thought they were more effective. Getting the ball into the opposition final third quickly is more effective from them than trying to build through because you allow teams to bank up and that's when I feel at times they struggle to break them down. More direct would work.
That's how she plays as well from the Swedish.
They've got pace up front. I don't know why they don't exploit teams
because
Lyon play a high
line. I think for Arsenal set pieces in terms of like utilizing their height in terms of corners and stuff like that, so I can't see them getting 3 points. I think potentially one if they do get the three. I think a set piece will definitely be in and around that reason why they get that. So
If it's two center backs holding that middle space as well. What about Paris, PSG, Chelsea? PSG looks
coming
right.
to support Paris today. I mean, you can see in a nice trackie.
Yeah, was there anyone in this room that is a PSG fan? Or?
We'll ask her because I would have worn my Chelsea shirt if I'd known.
Take that hoodie off. The blue collar, the cause one underneath. I think Chelsea's got too much. I think that they'll definitely win at PSG, I think, away. As you said, the travel distance isn't that much. It's the same as, it's quicker than going to Manchester from London.
It's
so
true.
That's not going to be a problem. And as Kel said, I think they're going to be revved up. Emma's going to be on the phone. And they just need to go out there and do what they do.
Nice.
I certainly think Chelsea are stronger to go and win that game away. They don't have any injuries, so obviously with Harder returning, I think that's key for them. And they've got a good squad depth. I think
it doesn't matter really who plays. Every player off the bench is of a high level.
They take three off and three more come on, and you're like, I didn't even realize they were on the bench.
Yeah. But I'm saying Jess Carter was one of their best players last year and can't even get in a team.
Yeah.
And you think how good she was last year, whether that be as a central of a back three, which Buchanan's come in, so obviously that competition is even harder, or whether that where she played on the right hand side of a wing back of a five. Both of those positions, I thought she dominated when she played, and everybody was talking about she should be starting for England. To then come back after the Euros, having not played a minute, or she played, I think, 10 minutes of that in the Euros, to then not get in the Chelsea team.
And even
it's
that,
crazy to think that.
That centre back, you've got Eriksen, Millie Bright, and now Buchanan, and even those strong. Three.
What do you think of the French, the French girl they signed? What's the French girl they signed, the fullback? The captain
Perisic,
she can't ever get in the team at the minute. I mean, she started at the weekend, but in terms of breaking into that team, it's such a difficult team to break in. So it keeps the competition level for places really high.
So we think Chelsea.
I saw Guru writing a couple of weeks ago. I did a piece with her on the
nice,
pitch.
Cross and finish.
And she was really down to earth and very open, and she said the training pre-season was one of the hardest that she's done. Emma really pushed the team, and she said the quality is so high. Every player is at it, so technical, and pushing each other on a daily basis. And I just think that again, they have that, and that's I don't see any other team in the WSL that has that right now.
And that's, I guess, what you need to take it from winning the WSL to winning a Champions League, because that's what Lyon has, don't they? They've got that mentality, they've got those international players that keep coming in, and all the competition for literally every spot is what I consistently hear from Lyon, where the players say, yeah, it's great to be there, but actually I'm learning so much and I have to compete every single day for my spot. So
do you think an English team can win it this year?
Yeah, Lauren's going to score, definitely. Lauren James is going to score in the PSG, and she's going to take that confidence all the way to the final.
I hope we can, because obviously after winning the Euros, you'd like to think like our league's competitive, like, but we just don't seem to
winning
Kelly
the Euros.
Kelly was the last time that Kelly was in the last team that did it.
2007.
How many English players won the Euros in Chelsea team? And this is where I come back to, on an international level, what is that looking like when we transfer that back into club, our domestic league? They're not playing. There's like three clubs that have majority of the English players, and how many of them actually play and start? So now we're really looking at what are they doing domestically. So
I also think that Wolfsburg looks really good this season. They have a really nice mix of a Pop, who's very experienced and clearly came off of an amazing women's Euros, but then an Oberdorf coming through, and some of the foreign players, Bex Blomqvist, the Swedish. I mean, they just have a really nice mix of players right now, and I've heard as well that their preseason has been really tough, and they've had a really good start to their season. So mentally, I think that they're ready to go. I was chatting with them last week, so...
But certainly Barcelona is the team to beat, right?
Yeah.
It has to be.
Yeah, they've strengthened, haven't they? I mean, you've got Barca, you've got...
I think they got any four
even,
of those
even Bayern Munich this year, they look good as well. Yeah. So you've got Bayern, Barca, Wolfsburg, Chelsea, Arsenal, Lyon, PSG. So
we've got the Champions League.
Okay, but if you have to choose one team right now, who are you going with for the Champions League winner?
Wolfsburg.
Oh.
Is that because she just bigged them up?
No.
For once, you agree with me, Farah.
Do you think they're going to win? You didn't say.
Yeah, no. Go ahead. I'll do my turn after. Go ahead, Eartha. Who do you think's going to win?
Barcelona.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm with Barca too. I just think with signing Kira Walsh, she's just brought you to another level. And they've done it. They've got the experience. They kept their core group of players. I just think they will be untouchable.
I know Barca, in terms of possession, they're always strong. And I just don't think their league's strong enough to test them weekly, like when they come to Champions League. I think sometimes, and we've seen that with Lyon, when they was aggressive against them in the final, they struggled.
Yeah. They were absolutely...
But I think that, I haven't played against a tougher team, Kel, than Wolfsburg when we played, in terms of
is that why you think? Why do you think
Their transitions are just so good. They're so good in transition.
But do Barca get to the final?
And I don't... Depends
but
on
we're
who
talking
they
about
take,
winners.
If they face Lyon along the way or Wolfsburg. Whichever way, but I just think if they face Wolfsburg, they'll struggle.
But surely they've learned from that from last season. So now
they just
have to back up, and then they just catch them on the break, because they're not going to be as naive now and just try and
play. I don't think Barca aren't a counter-attacking team, are they?
No, but I'm saying in terms of the players that they've got, the talent that they've got, they're able to create stuff out of nothing. So I think in terms of the tactical side of things, they will sit back a bit more and defend. They've got Lucy, they've got Kira, they've added to it. And then they've got Magic that can
you
go
said
on.
Lucy and Kira, two players that like to attack.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Tactically, they have to get it right in terms
of
playing against
that
higher quality.
Yeah, no, they do. I think it is a tactical game, but that's why I think German teams are so much more suited for that because they are comfortable with and without the ball. So you give them the ball, they can play. They're comfortable for, for teams having long periods of the ball and them not. And then playing in that transition moment.
And even when
and I think that's the difference.
In that second game when Barcelona came to Wolfsburg, Barcelona had already gone through and Wolfsburg was not gonna go through, but they beat Barcelona and I was commentating in the game and that was a solid game from that Wolfsburg team. And actually it could have been an even bigger score. So looking at them in their home environment against a Barcelona team and winning and very comfortably winning, I think I'm gonna have to go with Wolfsburg too as my alma mater. I think one of us played there, one of us didn't, but that's cool.
I just watched.
All right, well, we could sit here for another few hours/days contemplating all the things in women's football, but first of all, we just want to thank our amazing guest Kelly Smith for coming. Thank you so much, Kel. That was amazing.
Cheers, Kel.
Thank you. Much appreciated. Yep. The one and only.
Can I come back on?
First one, Kel. And I appreciate you being here, helping drive and push our podcast that has only just started. So episode 3.
Really enjoyed it. It was like I was sitting on the couch with friends at home.
That's how we want it to be.
Love it.
just missing a cup of tea.
Yeah. I've got some people outside waiting.
Farrah's a good tea maker. She'll make you one after.
Right, and that's it for us then for episode 3 of Boots, Balls, and Bras. Catch us next week, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and listen to us anywhere where you get your podcasts. Thanks again. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Ciao.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.